Hi there. Welcome to the From Lab to Launch podcast by Qualio, where we share inspiring stories from the people on the front lines of life sciences. Tune in and leave inspired to bring your life-saving products to the world.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to From Lab to Launch by Qualio. I'm Meg, your host. Glad to be here and really excited for today's episode. Before we get started, we'd love it if you rated the podcast. It's easy to do and share it with any of your science nerd friends. We know you have some. And if you'd like to be on the show, please see the show notes for an application. Today, we're joined by Dan Luntz, co-founder and CEO of Previse. Previse is a pioneering medical solutions company specializing in the prevention and early detection of cancer, focusing initially on esophageal cancer. The Previse journey began as an exploration into a technology's viability for predicting esophageal cancer in patients with Barrett's esophagus, and it quickly revealed a genuine need among gastroenterologists. We'll get more into the background during the interview, and you can learn more about the Previse in the show notes as well. Dan Luntz is a former U.S. Marine and researcher at Johns Hopkins. He's been leading Previse since 2020, and we're excited to learn more about his journey from lab to launch. So let's get to it. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hi, Meg. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Can you share a little bit with your journey about what led you from a Marine to the CEO of Previse and what inspired you to focus on early cancer detection?
No, thank you for the question, Meg. So I joined the Marines straight out of high school and real an interest in serving God and serving my country. And one of the things that I found in my story, an impactful piece, is this purpose that I feel to serve others. So I served in the Marines from February 2005 to February 2012. Upon getting out, I found my way into the VA hospital and as a patient. And it was military-related health issues that I went into the VA for. And that was my real first exposure into healthcare. I found an interest in the mental health side in what's called kinesiotherapy, using exercise as a form of treatment for physical, mental, emotional conditions. And that was my first realization that this is what I wanted to do. In some capacity, I wanted to be involved in healthcare. I didn't know if it was physician, scientist, what pathway that would take. So I ended up going and getting my undergrad in exercise science. After receiving my undergrad, I transitioned to Johns Hopkins, started working as a research coordinator in interventional pulmonology, got my MBA at Johns Hopkins, transitioned to a more like a clinical research network position, really helping on the administrative side to develop clinical research trials for therapeutics, for medical devices, and for diagnostics. And it was during this time that I went to a Johns Hopkins Tech Ventures meeting, and there's the tech transfer office for Johns Hopkins. So the office where faculty members will go in and receive support, protecting technologies through, you know, getting technologies patented, licensing out technologies, or starting companies. And I went to that meeting and I heard a gentleman share about a technology he developed that he felt like could really impact patients, potentially save lives. But as it stood, he felt like this technology would just be in some high impact journals, would just really live within the research realm. And that purpose kind of, you know, I heard that purpose from him for serving others. And I approached him after that meeting. That was Dr. Steve Meltzer, my co-founder. He's a GI physician, researcher at Johns Hopkins. And we spoke about this technology he developed for patients with the premalignant condition, Barrett's esophagus, and for detecting and preventing esophageal cancer, about methylation biomarkers. And Meg, it actually started off as a free internship. I said to him, hey, I don't know much about this condition. I don't know much about methylation, but, you know, I'm interested in entrepreneurship. I want to serve others. Maybe I can do some customer discovery. And that's what really sparked off our relationship. And we started meeting regularly. And several months later, we uh, we realized, wait, this might really be an opportunity for us to get something out there. And that was the start of Previse.
What a cool journey that's been for you. From Camp Pendleton all the way to Johns Hopkins, from unpaid internship to CEO. Now that's incredible. How does Previse differentiate itself in the field of cancer detection, particularly with your ESO Predict test?
Yeah, so we're really focused on the prevention side. So there's a lot of wonderful technologies coming out. And you've heard of like a multi-cancer early detection test and blood tests for detecting early cancer. There's a issue when it comes to esophageal cancer, and that's that even if found local, even if it's stage one disease, the five-year survival rate is 47%. So even if you find it at the earliest stages, it's oftentimes already too late. So for esophageal cancer, there is this what's believed to be obligate precursor called Barrett's esophagus. And Barrett's esophagus occurs in about 10 to 15% of patients with chronic acid reflux or chronic GERD. And so there's a large number of individuals in the United States who have Barrett's esophagus. And it's this metaplastic change that'll occur. It's really quite incredible, this change that the body will make, where the lower esophagus goes from being like your skin, the squamous epithelium, to columnar cells, which is more like your stomach or your intestines, which handles acid much better. The issue is that it puts you at risk for developing esophageal cancer. It increases the likelihood as much as 55 times for developing esophageal cancer. So when a patient is diagnosed via endoscopy with Barrett's esophagus, they're put on a surveillance program, oftentimes a lifetime surveillance program, to determine which patients are likely to progress to esophageal cancer. Now, these samples are taken, these biopsy samples are taken, pathology reviews them, and they say whether they see any abnormality called dysplasia. So what our test is able to do is to take that standard of care biopsy sample. We only need one of the biopsy samples. We take a few slices off of that block. We analyze it. We look at DNA methylation of four specific genes. We run it through our algorithm, and we're able to produce a five-year risk score for that patient. So personalized information for that physician. So we're the first and only DNA test for Barrett's esophagus prognosis. And it's been wonderful to see the impact it's already making in the clinic of GI practices.
How widely distributed is it being used in GI practices in the States?
Yeah, so we, I'll tell you what, do you mind if I don't go far down that path?
Sure, yeah. All right. Sorry, that was an ad lib question. I'm sorry.
It was such a good question, but it's funny because we're fundraising and we're, maybe we can say it. Let me not throw numbers out there.
Yeah, maybe, but can I reframe the question of like, how big has your impact been so far in the GI space?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So far, this sounds amazing, this technology. How wide has your impact been in the GI space so far?
Yeah, so it's been wonderful to see the adoption and really the rapid adoption in the clinic. We have a number of academic sites and community clinics who have adopted this technology. One of the really cool emails we just received last week from a GI physician shared about a patient that they had who had familial history. They had a brother who had esophageal cancer, and this patient had this precancerous Barrett's esophagus. And the physician was trying to determine what to do with this patient. Do we keep him on a surveillance program? Do we consider treatment? At what frequency do we do surveillance if we stay with surveillance? So they ordered our ESO Predict test, and they received a higher risk score. It showed that this patient had a higher likelihood for developing esophageal cancer in the next 5 years. So they actually moved forward, spoke with the patient about it, and determined that ablation was the best pathway forward. So they were able to move forward with that endoscopic treatment. It's an ambulatory treatment they're able to do in the endoscopy clinic, and potentially it's another cancer prevented.
That's amazing. That's such great impact and great to see such a great adoption on a new technology. Sometimes that's a difficult hurdle for new and emerging technologies to have the value propositions and have clinics and hospitals pick up their technology. But that's amazing the traction you guys have gotten already. That's great.
Thank you.
Many founders on our show have interesting stories about fundraising. Can you share any fundraising experience you've had recently and how you've worked to raise funds to bring your products to market?
Yeah, so fundraising journey wise, you know, it's funny because I think back to our first investor that came on. It was an angel investor and a successful entrepreneur who himself was facing cancer. He had a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, and about 5 minutes after I met him, he said, "I'm going to invest in your company," and it was really altruistic. And he took a flyer on us And things have progressed and changed a bit since that first check that came in. So we are currently fundraising. And what we're really focused now on is the pathway to more market adoption. So commercial activities, and then what's called market access and our reimbursement strategy, how we're gonna achieve what's called local coverage determination with Medicare and with private payers as well. So our story has really transitioned from the early altruistic days of, hey, this is something that could potentially save lives, to now saying, okay, this is how we're actually going to execute on this strategy.
Yeah, such an important piece of that puzzle, getting the payers to pay for the product.
Oh, yeah.
The patients want it, but the payers have to pay for it to make it happen, right?
Thanks.
Wonderful. Are there plans to expand Previse technology to other forms of cancer?
Yeah, so we're taking a broader view, both with oncology cancer and then also with other upper GI conditions. So one of the things that we've been really fortunate with is receiving non-dilutive funding as well. So there's these NIH grants called SBIR, Small Business Innovative Research Grants. So we just received a $1.8 million grant to conduct further studies with our EsoPredict test, but also we've been fortunate to receive NIH grant funding for our pipeline technologies. And one of the things that we're looking at is how can we do this non-endoscopically? So we started off with endoscopy and these biopsy samples and risk stratifying patients, but it still requires an endoscopy. And there's another issue, which is the detection of that Barrett's esophagus. So we call it a sponge on a string device that we've developed, which the patient swallows a capsule, sits in the stomach for 5 minutes, and it has a string. We're able to the capsule reveals the sponge. We're able to pull the sponge out via a string. It's a 5-minute procedure, really painless procedure for the patient. But from that, we're able to analyze DNA and other markers, and we're evaluating early detection of Barrett's esophagus and the two primary types of esophageal cancer, adenocarcinoma and squamous cell. One of the things that I think is really exciting is that through these NIH-funded studies, we're doing work here in the United States at multiple sites, also in Europe, and then also in East Africa and lower and moderate income countries such as Uganda and Tanzania, where squamous cell carcinoma is one of the leading causes of mortality in men. So looking at how do we touch patients along this journey, and then we're also evaluating other conditions such as stomach cancer and throat cancer as well.
That's amazing. Seems like a lot of applications and lots of cancers that can be prevented through your technology. Great. Is there anything else we can expect in terms of new developments or new tests in the near future from Previse?
Yeah, so we have some exciting announcements that'll be coming out this year, publications for EsoPredict, but also for our pipeline technologies, and some news that'll be coming out about our medical device, also about our assays and tests in development. So it's 2024 is a really exciting year for us.
Well, I will be staying tuned for all that exciting news from Previse. Here at Qualio, we provide an eQMS software. So quality is always near and dear to our hearts, mine especially. But most founders don't have a quality or regulatory background when they start and can get caught off guard with regulations, as such in the medical device industry. So we like to ask founders like yourself about your journey through the quality and regulatory landscape and how you've navigated that getting your product to market.
Yeah. So when we started, no, and a really important question. And you know, when we started Previse, it was something that I knew really nothing about. We saw this cool technology that we felt like could make an impact with patients. And it was all of those reasons we were diving in. And I remember speaking to a founder of another diagnostics company here in Baltimore, and they told me about a CLIA lab. And I had never heard this term before. So I remember going home, running home and Googling and trying to learn everything I could about a CLIA lab. And I remember, Maggie, it was funny. We started, and actually one of the team members who helped us develop our CLIA lab, one of the first discussions I had with her when we were first thinking about getting this company going was, hey, what is this CLIA lab they speak of? So you hit the nail on the head when you talked about founders who don't have experience in that regulatory realm, a very important realm. So we were able to bring on the proper support to develop our CLIA lab and to undergo developing a lot of SOPs, our quality management systems, quality controls, and get those in place. And beyond clinical validation, which is what we often think about in the academic universe, diving in with the analytical validation. And how do we take this cool data and good data that we may have seen in the academic realm in a research lab, and how do we transition that into a clinical lab where you might be doing a large volume of testing per day in different patients and ensuring that you're getting consistent results that you can trust for those patients? And it was quite a journey learning about it. So I'm grateful to share that, you know, we were able to bring on the proper expertise. I learned a whole lot more, and I got a wonderful group around me, a team around me that's been able to develop ESO predict validation studies analytically and clinical validation studies and put our QMS systems in place. So we've gone through our CLIA compliance inspections and been able to get CLIA in all states, not New York State yet, but in all other states. So we're launching as a laboratory developed test. So really pleased with where we've been able to get with that.
Amazing journey from what is this CLIA to throwing out all the acronyms like QMS, FDA, Part 820, all of that. So lovely to see that journey from a CEO and founder. Related to quality and innovation, how does Previse strike a balance between pushing the boundaries of medical technology and ensuring compliance with those regulatory standards?
Yeah, no, and this is it's a really good question because there are universes, you know, when you think of innovation and when you think of developing a consistent, high quality performing test, it's sometimes hard to connect that, you know, in the research realm when we're looking at innovating. You might be modifying your procedures regularly. You might be, you know, you're doing DNA extraction one way and you learn about a different protocol, or you modify the temperatures a little bit, or whatever it may be, the time that it's sitting in some kind of solution. And you say, okay, hey, let's make this change. This works better. And you're constantly innovating and optimizing. And toying around a little bit. And it's really about, okay, demonstrating in early biomarker discovery and validation that, hey, this works. Look, we've got good, what's called area under the curves or sensitivity and specificity in this limited case control setting. But it's, you know, and getting that next research paper published and showing the innovation and maybe going for grant funding for that innovation. Whereas in the clinical lab, you know, I heard a founder of another company here in Baltimore, a diagnostics company, who shared that one of the toughest things for him, he's a PhD scientist, he shared that one of the toughest things for him was to come to that place where he had to release control and had to let kind of his baby, if you will, something he had been, you know, working on for years and investing so much time and coming to a place where, okay, it's time to release it so that now it can go into that next step, into product development and being developed into a clinically usable product. So one of the things that that we found is the earlier that we can get involved, be involved with technologies that are just being invented or assays that are just being discovered, the better, so that we can start putting into place some analytical testing, start looking at, okay, how will this really translate into the clinical realm? You know, how do we start to lock down procedures and just to have wonderful interactions with people on the research side and on the discovery side, and people in the clinical lab setting and more on the regulatory side. So I think one of the keys for success that for us at least is the earlier is the better, and the clear communication. And then that's really been a key for us.
Thanks for sharing that. That's great advice, I think, for the starting out, trying to find that balance. Earlier is better to bring in the quality and strike that balance. So we talked about kind of new things coming in the near future. Do you see any long-term goals around cancer detection and PROVICE that you want to share in the next 5 to 10 years? Big dreams for the organization?
Yeah, so really focused right now on getting EsoPredict out there, and how can we impact more lives? How can we increase adoption, make it more accessible for patients? So like we talked about, that's on the commercial front, but also on the reimbursement front and getting coverage, becoming an in-network test with different payers. And then along with that, looking for different avenues that we can bring other clinically relevant and important tests to market that are going to make a difference in patient care. You know, we talked about the multi-cancer early detection, but I think one of the things that has been really interesting to see in the past couple of years is a return by a lot of companies to focusing more so on specific cancers or specific indication. You're seeing a lot of minimal residual disease testing focused on, you know, starting off with a specific cancer, whether it be colon cancer or lung cancer. And what we find is on the regulatory front, you know, the FDA front, on the payer front, it's currently more so built, our system's more so built for that. So it'll be wonderful to see not only the innovation from companies like PROVICE, but also as we go through and the FDA continues to try to iterate and innovate, and as payers try to come around and develop pathways for getting the necessary clinical analytical validation data and clinical utility data. So I think it's really going to be quite wonderful to see us as an ecosystem moving in that direction over the next 5-10 years.
I hope the healthcare system moves that quickly. I'm hopeful.
Yes.
Our last question is more of a fun one. We love to ask each of our guests at the end of the show, if we ran into you at the bookstore or at your local library, Dan, in what section would we find you?
So I am a big history buff and I love biographies. So I've done deep dives on Benjamin Franklin and different Walter Isaacson biographies. So I start a lot of biographies. I don't finish as many as I start, but very likely that's where you'd find me.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for sharing.
Sure. What about you?
Oh, I also am a big biography buff. I always like reading about people's lives. And the one on my bookshelf right now is Hedy Lamarr, an actress and innovator. So I'm saving that one for my March Women's History read. So, but probably the same. History and biographies are my thing these days.
Awesome. And I'll have to pick that book up.
Yeah. I'll send it over to you. For our folks wanting to learn more about PROVICE and yourself, where can they go along to follow along on your progress?
Yeah, please check us out at PROVICEDX.com. You can also look us up on LinkedIn, PROVICE Diagnostics, or me. You'll see me on LinkedIn, Daniel Lunds. And please connect with me.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll post all those in the show notes and we'll get connected and I'll send you that biography on Hedy Lamarr.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much, Meg.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of From Lab to Launch, brought to you by Qualio. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and give the show a positive review. It really helps us out. For more information about Qualio, our guest today, or to be a guest on a future episode, please refer to the show notes. Until next time.